Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you so much for being here for Squiggly Careers Live. Sarah and I are very happy to see you, though you may realise that I'm not with Sarah tonight, because unfortunately, and very sadly, Sarah is poorly today, which she is absolutely gutted about, because tonight is to celebrate and talk about the work that we did with the Pound Project. Where's JP? This is JP. JP is the founder of the Pound Project. This is JP, pioneer of publishing. And JP creates these beautiful, illustrated and creative books that really put a spotlight on the author's work and also produce books in a very sustainable way. So they only print what people order. So we're really, really passionate to work with JP on the project and to work on confidence, which is something that is really important to us in our work. And Sarah in particular, I think this has been her personal passion project. She loves independent publishing. She adores books. And she, all of the illustrations that you see in the book have been the work of Sarah and our designer, Jen. So she is gutted not to be here. Also, I think it's kind of ironic that tonight is all about confidence and I've sort of lost my confidence gremlin buddy and I'm here on my own with you. And when our session's on confidence, we often talk about the difference between the comfort, the courage and the challenge zone. And I think comfort on the podcast for me is being at home, recording it with Sarah. She's in her pajamas. I'm still in stilettos. I've got wine. She's got a cup of tea. And we just talk to each other about career stuff and I think kind of forget that anyone listens to it. That's my comfort zone. Challenge zone is doing this with Sarah, because it's not what we do normally, but you know, we've done this before, so it feels difficult but doable. Courage is me here on my own tonight, where stuff feels a little bit... Thank you. Where it feels a little bit scary. It feels really scary. But I often think in the times when stuff feels scary, like the courageous moments, it's often... You know, the moments where our gremlins like to grow, but they're often the moments where you can learn the most too. So tonight, what I hope is that you can learn a bit about gremlins. You're going to hear some stories from some amazing people who are brave enough to talk about their confidence with you. So we'll get onto that in a second. So I hope you learn a bit about confidence that you can take away, but know that I'm also learning a bit about confidence too, because you're here as well. So we're all in it together, as ever, on the Squiggly Careers podcast. So plan for the night is we have three amazing guests with us. First of all, you're going to hear me talk to Daisy Buchanan, author, podcast host, friend of Amazing If, and we're going to dive into some of Daisy's experience around confidence. Then I'm going to talk to Michael Gunning, professional athlete turned advocate and ambassador for LGBTQ+, and really making sure there's equality in sport. So some really interesting kind of career pivots and challenges that we'll get into there. And then you're going to hear from Dolly Alderton, author, agony aunt extraordinaire, screenwriter, many woman of many, many things, also who is here tonight a little bit poorly. So giant thank you for being here for that. And then we'll end on their best piece of career advice. So no pressure, but everyone's waiting. So hopefully that's all clear and you're ready to cage some confidence gremlins. I'm going to get started by inviting Daisy up on the stage. Thank you, Daisy. Thank you, Daisy. Also, fellow author with the Pound Project as well. So, Daisy, thank you for being here. And thank you. You've supported Sarah and I's work for such a long time. So we're really, really appreciative of that.
Well, I'm a big fan. It's funny because I was thinking I felt quite relaxed, not nervous until the second I stood on the first stair. I thought, oh, here it comes.
So I wanted to talk about a quote that you gave us for the book to kind of set this bit off. So you told us for the Gremlins book, and we included this in the book, that confidence isn't an unassailable conviction in our own brilliance. It's a quiet, steady sense that making the work will always be worth it. And I like that idea that it's not, confidence is not some kind of miraculous thing that just happens and that we hope for, but it's this kind of continued thing that is connected to our work. But as an author, and books don't get written overnight, when you are doing the work, how do you make sure that gremlins don't tell you you're not good enough or the work's not good enough and get in the way of the progress that you're making?
Oh, the boring answer, I'm afraid, is just practice. I'm really feeling it at the moment. I am partway through a new book. It's a book about reading and anxiety and why I think reading's a wonderful habit. And, you know, the gremlins are out in force every day. They're like, well, you're not convincing anyone of any of this. And I should say that the book I'm writing is very much inspired by the book I wrote with the Pound Project, Burn Before Reading. I get another shout out to the fabulous JP, who is here and goes a little way. He's you see, this is my deflection gremlin trick. I'm like, now, now you're feeling self-conscious, so I don't have to. I have written, you see, again, I feel really like, oh, people are going to think I'm showing off. I've just written my fourth novel and I've written some other non-fiction books as well. And so the only way I can really deal with the gremlins is think, oh, it always feels like this. And I think with confidence, I've believed it will like fall in the night like snow. I will jump up one day and look out of the window and be like, oh, confident Santa came in the night. I feel great. And realizing it feels dreadful until it doesn't. And it's like going on the bear hunt. I can only go through this feeling. And also, I think sometimes we all need to give ourselves a break. That sounds really obvious. But if we're struggling with something and the gremlins are saying, well, this is, you can't do this for whatever reason, just remembering that often it's because the thing we're trying to do is hard. It's supposed to be hard. And we're, you know, stretching to meet a challenge. And the confidence comes as we stretch. We don't start confident. We get confident.
That's interesting. So confidence grows through persistent practice. And it's interesting. So you talked about two gremlins there that actually aren't in the book, because the book doesn't cover every single gremlin. They cover the most common ones. But I was quite interested in your deflection gremlin. And then your, it's sort of like a, I don't know, avoidance of pride gremlin. You know, when you said, oh, I've written four books, but I'll just move on from that really quickly because it sounds boastful. Where do they come from? How do they show up? Do you recognize them regularly?
Oh, that's so funny, because I know what my gremlins are. I've got a likability gremlin. I've got a comparison gremlin. I've got the classics. But I think that's it. It's really complicated, I think, now more than ever, when we feel as though our attention is constantly being sought and competed over. And I'm a person in the world with, you know, a phone. I like reading books and watching TV and watching films and looking at art and eating food. There are lots of things that distract me. I'm in the very early stages of as sort of understanding my own neurodivergence and perhaps beginning to consider how very distractible I am. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it, that I think I possibly feel an anxiety that when there are so many things competing for our attention, how can I be sort of worth that? I mean, I definitely also, when talking about my work, you know, I like talking in, you know, nerdy detail about sort of characters and storytelling, getting very excited about, you know, what I think is interesting about the process itself. But I still don't know really how to kind of hold people's attention. I mean, I host a books podcast, You're Booked, and sometimes I think, is that my deflection gremlin? Did I create a podcast to have conversations with other people about other people's books? Because
it's very meta.
As a way of hiding. But then maybe that's kind of a great thing. Maybe I should say thank you to that gremlin, because I have a lot of fun making that podcast.
Maybe you should. And sometimes I wonder, you know, saying thank you to your gremlin, I think avoiding your gremlin or being scared of your gremlin, I think sometimes your gremlin teaches you. If I think about my gremlin, so I have a gremlin about sort of needing to be liked. And a lot of the time for me, particularly as a manager, that has sometimes stopped me being really challenging, because I've thought, oh, don't be too difficult, because they'll think you're a difficult person and then you won't do well and you'll be doomed and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
I love you'll be doomed.
Yeah, I know. I got to that really quickly. Your career will be over tomorrow. But I think my gremlin, just being aware of my gremlin and then sort of being more conscious of how other people manage those sort of difficult conversations at work, and that actually I kind of respected other people who did things that I wasn't doing. Once I became aware of it, you know, you can know it and name it, then I felt like I could actually do something about it. And so in some ways, I'm kind of grateful to my gremlin for the journey it's meant that I've gone on. I don't know if this is a tough question, but do you think you ever hide behind your words? You know, you put your work in your words. You kind of, you know, you talked about, oh, I can get really passionate about my characters. Do you think you ever use that as a sort of a deflection tactic? I can talk about my characters and then I don't have to talk about myself.
That's a really good question. And I think I possibly do. Like, I think I am so much better kind of on the page than I am out loud. You have a lot of control when you're writing. And in terms of my vocabulary, like, I know at the moment I'm conscious of sort of how I'm kind of stumbling over words and all of those verbal tics. You don't write sentences using things like and kind of. And I think that the more I sort of go out in the world, there I go again. I'm very aware of these tics. It's a perfectionism, I think, and it has taken me a long time to understand that's what it is. And I don't know if that's something that you identify with, as because I can imagine being in that scenario where you think there is a perfect way to handle this complicated and daunting situation where I deliver exactly what I need to say. People take what they need to take, the thing gets done and no one's feelings get hurt. Like, I always, I think, secretly believe there's a perfect version of my life. Like, the A side is sort of running smoothly and I'm scrambling along the bottom doing the B version. And it's taken me a long time to realise that's not true. I still forget that's not true all the time.
I think a lot of people have that kind of, you know, that wherever it's come from in their life, that kind of perfectionism can really drive their behaviour, and it feeds the failure gremlin and kind of the worries, like you say, about not being liked or not being good enough, that kind of desire for perfection.
And I don't think perfectionists ever feel perfect. And when I imagine a perfectionist, I think of someone in an immaculate, tailored skirt suit in an office with a pointer and a pie chart, being like, oh no, it's 2 millimetres to the left. I better tweak that. Perfect again. And I know I'm like in my head and heart, I'm this sort of hot mess. Like, I feel as though, and sometimes when I talk to people and I feel like I'm sort of trying to be a professional lady and, you know, on time and commit to deadlines. And I just, you know, want everyone to like me and I just don't want anyone to be cross with me is what that really means. But I think that people can tell that I am really secretly Jeremy from Peep Show. I'm a sort of delusional idiot who should be living in a caravan at the bottom of her parents' garden. Not that there's anything wrong with that in this economy with our housing crisis, but
I feel like your gremlin has like layers, that it is really hard for you to see reality because your gremlin is creating like layers of confusion in about all these things, what must be going around in your head.
Gremlin is in a doomed band with super hands. That can't be good.
No, never. Very Peep Show reference for people. It's a good program. Did want to focus a little bit on hard times. So I feel like there's sort of normal times when your gremlin might show up, like when you're writing work at home and the gremlin sort of pops up, so the normal times. But then there's also like the knotty times, the times when it feels particularly tough. And our gremlins love to grow in those moments because that's where they're like going, I told you you couldn't do this. I told you no one liked you, all that stuff. Is there a knotty time that you can sort of recognise in your career? And what has that taught you about you and your confidence that's been helpful?
I suppose I think about maybe when I left my job at Bliss magazine. And actually, two things happened. So after I graduated, I panicked and I took pretty much the first job that was offered to me because I didn't think I'd ever get another one, a bit like me in relationships, really. Luckily, I grew out of that. And it was the wrong job for me. And after 8 months, I got fired. It was in financial PR. I was very, very bad at it. I really wanted to be good. I really wanted to try very hard. But like, my personality just didn't fit. And I was so desperate to round my square peggedness and fit into their hole. Oh, God.
We'll just move on. We'll move on.
We can edit that. But it just, it never, ever occurred to me that it went two ways, that it wasn't really fair. Oh, no.
I was leaving that.
allowed to say something very serious. That you're allowed to be happy and relaxed and like your job, and you don't have to suit everyone and everything and be in that place. And you know, when I got fired, it felt like the ultimate rejection. I honestly didn't think anyone else would want me. And then I became features intern at Bliss magazine, which is pretty much the opposite job to financial PR. And that first year, I was so happy. I couldn't believe you were allowed to be this happy in the job. I couldn't believe that I was good at it. And I didn't have to pretend to be someone else. I wasn't kind of straining or being awkward. It just came naturally. And that's something that I think we talk about. I've been thinking about this a lot. Sorry, this is a little bit like, you know, describing a thing that happened to me when I was five. When I was five, it was a school sports day. And unlike Michael, I am no athlete. And we had this thing called the beanbag race. Yeah. And we all sort of put the beanbags on our heads. And all the other kids just ran off because it was a race. That was the bit they were focused on. And I thought, what on earth are they doing? The beanbags will just fall off. So I walked very steadily and slowly, and I won. Everyone else lost their beanbags. I won the Smarties. But it wasn't like I had a strategy. I just did what came naturally, and it worked. And I didn't stop to kind of second guess myself. And I thought, sometimes that's the thing, isn't it? That gremlins come and say, no, they come and tell you it's supposed to be difficult, it's supposed to be complicated, you're supposed to be very unhappy and hiding it. And actually, you can sort of say, thank you for that information. I release you. Let's carry on. And then just keep going slowly and steadily.
Well, I think sometimes as well, people have a confidence gremlin around success kind of being about winning. And therefore, if I don't win the race, then I am not a success. And it means that they can compete in maybe unhealthy ways. They don't feel very good when they're winning. It's actually something I really want to talk to Michael about, you know, what happens when you don't win. And that's what success in your kind of profession is. But it sounds like maybe that isn't your gremlin, that you don't have that need to win. You have some other gremlins, Daisy, but maybe not that one.
Well, I do now. I really struggle with social media. I have a lot of incredibly talented peers who are phenomenally successful, deservedly so. You know, there are a few in this room, just a few feet from me. And it's funny because I used to think, oh, this is envy, this is jealousy. And it isn't that, because I genuinely, with my hand on my heart, I do not feel any resentment over anyone else's success. I just feel like bottom of the class. I just feel like that's the standard and I'm falling so short of that standard. I stopped drinking a little while ago. I'm not in AA, but there's an expression that people in AA use that I really like. And this expression is really saying, don't go to bars when you're trying to stop drinking, which is, if you hang out in a barbershop for long enough, you will get a haircut. And that's what I think in terms of when that comparison gremlin really comes up. And I just feel that anything but success is failure. I think, well, my peers are phenomenal. All these people I know are incredible and doing the most amazing things. Logically, like, I can't always be the worst one. It might be it's not my time, but my time will come. And it's just a case of being really, really patient, that nothing lasts forever. And that's such a difficult lesson to learn. Like writing a book, it's one of the things that you can only really learn very slowly over time, by sustained periods of thinking that everything is forever and everything is doomed.
So noticing that social media maybe contributes negatively to your confidence because it creates comparison, and so maybe kind of pulling away from that a little bit, or noticing that alcohol maybe creates some anxiety that exacerbates your gremlins, so coming away from that. Have there been any other things that you have done in your life which have created a kind of a friendly space for your confidence to thrive rather than your gremlins to grow?
Well, I've got to talk about reading because it's very much on my mind. And it's noticing, I think, how much better I feel in my body when I do it. And, you know, like not drinking, like I noticed that all of my gremlins really come out to play when I'm feeling tired or run down, when I'm feeling dysregulated, and being able to notice when an emotion has gone beyond a thought, and when it's shaking its way across my body, and that's when I'm vulnerable to gremlins. So it's getting all the things in place. And yet in reading, it does just make me feel calm and restored. I do lots of comfort reading. I reread my favourite books. But also at the moment, I'm reading Middlemarch. We had the writer Jilly Cooper on your book podcast before Christmas, which is a dream come true for me because I am obsessed. If you're not familiar, Jilly Cooper is fabulous. She pretty much defined the bonkbuster in the 80s. She wrote those the sexy books with sort of the hand on the trousers.
I remember reading them at school in an all-girls school and just feeling really naughty. That was like reading Riders or whatever it was.
Oh, I love Riders, but they are like the most brilliant fun. But Jilly was horrified that I hadn't read Middlemarch, and lots of people have been horrified that I hadn't. But for some reason, I didn't listen to my own mum, but I would listen to Jilly.
I mean, that's normal. I think that's completely normal.
It was realising, oh, if I don't read it, I'm never going to read it, which you think, well, of course. But, and I realised, oh, it's going to be quite daunting. I thought, well, I'm going to try and read two chapters every morning. And at first, you know, it is. The language is dense. It's a little dry in places. Things were expressed differently. And then I just felt myself getting hooked. And George Eliot sort of comes out with like one phenomenal home truth, a chapter. And some of it feels so contemporary. And the sort of the love stories and the love triangles, it's really gossipy and soapy, but elegant. And it really kind of lives in my head. And I thought, oh, I'm the sort of person who reads Middlemarch because I read Middlemarch. And it's a bit like getting into the freezing cold sea. And I've become the sort of person who does that by doing it. And I think realizing rather than me deflecting my gremlins and trying, well, what am I doing wrong? What can I stop? What's bad? Me creating new habits and hobbies, new things to do, and things that are more interesting than the fight I can have with the gremlins. And when they turn up, I can say, I'm sorry, look, I'll just finish this chapter and I'll be right with you. That makes a big difference.
This is going to give me the energy to tackle you rather than kind of tackling you face on.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for being kind of brave enough to talk through some things. I think it is difficult to talk about your gremlins because it's kind of quite exposing, but hopefully the more you hear us do it, the more you'll feel comfortable doing it, and the more that you'll realize it is kind of possible to cage a gremlin, and you'll get some insights and tools and tactics, whether it's sleep or social media or reading, the beauty of reading, some things that will help you do that too.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So we've mentioned Michael quite a lot, so I feel like it might be time to bring Michael on and move from Elliot to athletics. So, Michael, please, please come up on stage. Where should we get you?
Thank you.
Michael, welcome to the Squiggly Careers podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, pleasure. I have been stalking Michael. on social media. Honestly, like LinkedIn and YouTube, I've been all over the place, and Instagram, and you are all kinds of smiley in your photos and all kind of smiley here. But one thing I would love to call out is I think sometimes we make assumptions that smiley, shiny people are always automatically confident. So we'll see how true. We'll see how true that is today. So Michael, for people that aren't familiar with your kind of career journey, your squiggly story so far, do you want to give us like the little potted nutshell of sort of from athlete to ambassador and advocate?
So yeah, if you haven't been able to tell, my shoulders are very broad as I'm a swimmer. Recently retired. I retired in 2022. And yeah, for me, I've had lots of different experiences. You know, I learned to swim at the age of 4 and my parents couldn't swim. So I think we were really passionate just about me learning and mastering the skill. Obviously, as a person of colour as well, there wasn't really many people around me who were swimming. So for me, I almost broke down my own barriers in order to overcome many challenges that I had and went on to representing both Great Britain. I represented Great Britain for 10 years and then Team Jamaica for 5 years and been to 2 World Championships, lots of medals that I can count, but unfortunately not the big Olympic Games. So yeah, many highs and lows, but I think another one as well is that I came out as gay in sport, in swimming. And I think as soon as I did, it was just a massive weight off my shoulders. And yeah, I think it's just made me into the person I am today, being so authentic. And the smile you see is real. I think I'm so blessed and lucky to have lived a career that I've enjoyed every single day, but it's had its challenges.
Pride in the book, you'll hopefully read it because you've got it. But in the book, we talk about pride being an important part of caging gremlins. Do you ever find yourself like, I don't know, like looking in the cabinet or going in the box in the loft to reflect on, I know you've got so many more things you'll achieve, but you have achieved an awful lot. Do you ever like look in the box and like feel proud?
Definitely. So I used to keep a logbook. So
I've seen it with all the highlights in it. Yeah, yes. I told you I stalked you.
Oh,
I was
goodness.
Amazing.
Wow, you've done your research. Yeah, for me, like actually documenting the good sessions really helped with my nerves. I think in swimming, you have so much pressure on you. And for me, 200 butterfly swimmer, you know, my race, my personal best for 200 butterfly was 1 minute 57.
I don't know what that means, and but it sounds really fast.
So basically like 1 minute 57. And obviously you have that race and you train every single day, 25 hours a week for that 2 minute swim. And I feel like actually when you kind of really take it away and you pull it apart, there's so much pressure because you stand at that, you know, Commonwealth Trials, World Trials, and you just have those 2 minutes to show the world what you're made of, and you either make it or you don't. And for me, actually documenting the highs, the confidence in my logbooks with some of the good sessions that I've done, but also just the highs and lows of me going on training camps and being away. Sometimes I just go into my room and I have a look at some of the experiences I've had and just count my blessings, really, because I've had so many amazing experiences, met so many great people, now you're included, and yeah, just been on the journey.
I think quite a lot of people, the work version of that, because most, I mean, some of you may also have medals for things. I have no medals, but I think I do have like a folder in my inbox of like some nice emails. That's my equivalent of a medal. Yeah. It's some nice, should anyone wish to send me a nice email, it will go in my nice email folder. But I think that's sort of like the equivalent of like the cabinet with the medals, just slightly more attainable. So a couple of things I really want to talk to you about. The career change. So being like, you know, your identity as a, you know, professional athlete doing the butterfly in a very, very fast time, and then moving to being kind of an ambassador, an advocate for equality in sports, a speaker on TV, and all the different things that you're doing now. I think lots of people do career change and shift from kind of maybe one identity to another. And I think gremlins can grow when you make those moves, because you're going from something that you know and feels, you know, might feel very expert and very good at, to something that's suddenly kind of new and different. Did you see a shift in terms of your confidence gremlins when you were making those career moves?
Oh, 100%. I think for me, you know, throughout my whole career of 16 years of international swimming has been my identity. It's been, you know, on all of my homework, I'm telling my secrets now, but all of my homework when I was younger, I used to put down the swimmer. And I think it was because I wanted that to be my identity more than anything else. I didn't really want to be seen as the black swimmer. I didn't really want to be seen as the gay boy. So for me, it was, you know, I was really proud to be a swimmer, and I, you know, kind of showed that wherever I went and was confident with that. So I think now kind of coming out of, you know, elite sport, and I'm very much still kind of, you know, holding on really tightly with presenting and broadcasting, but, you know, it's kind of finding out your new purpose and what you can give, because obviously it's great being the top, you know, 2% of the world where you're great at a sport. But I think now I feel like a normal person, and it's a really weird transition.
What sort of gremlins have grown? Like, have you gone, oh, I don't think I'm good enough, or that person's better? You know, we were talking about comparison. Have you felt that more now you've made that shift?
Yeah, I think, you know, throughout my whole career, you know, I'm not sure if you've heard the statement, but black people don't swim, black people sink in water. And I think for so long throughout my career, I've been trying to prove that I am good enough, that I deserve to be in the spaces that I'm in. And, you know, I don't think I'll ever lose that. I feel like it's because it's been such a part of me for so long, there will always be that niggle deep down inside saying, are you good enough for this? And almost justifying that I deserve to be in those spaces. So I feel like now, yeah, it's definitely shifted now that I've stopped swimming. And for me, I don't really get in the water anymore. Like, I'm trying to find my love again for just going to the pool and going for that leisure swim, because, you know, I used to be in the water 25 hours a week. I used to be doing 80,000 meters, and that was natural to me. So I think now it's doing swimming for your mental health. It's doing it and just enjoying it. And kind of any of those gremlins that do come out, it's knowing how to manage it, because obviously it's out of your comfort zone.
And your performance as an athlete was so transparent, right? You know, measured in seconds, you've tracked it in your logbook.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine you either improved or you didn't, you won or you lost, and you got that feedback very regularly. How did you make sure that that didn't erode your confidence? Because if someone was like telling me, oh, you lost today, Helen, and you lost yesterday and you lost the day before that, I would think, well, I'm just not going to go tomorrow. But you went again and again and again, and every day you can't have won. So how were you resilient when I would imagine sometimes you didn't get better, or maybe you did fail at something you wanted?
Yeah, I think every swimmer or every athlete plateaus where they don't increase their time or they go through a rough patch. And I think for me, it kind of came from me also taking something positive out of every swim. People think that swimming's an individual sport, but I really wouldn't have had the career that I've had without my friends, my teammates, my coaches, my nutritionist, my psychologist, and it's very much not just me. So I feel like after every swim I would do, I would always take one positive out of it. And I think, you know, the kind of the biggest thing for me with bouncing back was not making the Olympics, because your whole career, your whole life, you've got that dream of going. And in 2020, I qualified for the Olympics, but because of the pandemic, I had to re-qualify, and unfortunately I didn't. And it broke my world, because, you know, kind of having those plans that year, I think just, you know, shook many people in different ways. But for me, it was really, really hard. And I think one of the things I've learned now is actually let's kind of take this as what I would normally do and take something positive out of it. And I definitely wouldn't be the person I am today without going through that. And I think that's why every time I'm smiling, it's genuine, because I have had, you know, a very good career and I've learned a lot from it. And probably I've learned more than somebody who has gone to the Olympics, because I've learned more about myself in the journey.
Can I ask a question about working with a psychologist when you were swimming? Because I think that's fascinating. Were there any amazing lessons they shared, or things that really gave you a solid framework for kind of staying confident or looking at, you know, what you were doing within the sport and outside it?
Yeah. So for me, I felt like my head and my mind was tangled with different emotions and feelings and pressures. And I think the best thing that a psychologist done was help untangle those with, you know, different methods like breathing techniques and, you know, probably the things that sound quite obvious. But for me, I think as an athlete, you're always so fast paced, and going into a new year or a new day, you've got so many goals, and it's almost just taking a step back and knowing that it's okay just to focus on one thing. You don't have to be looking at the outcome or where you're going to be this time next year or in 2 years. Just focus on the day. For me, I actually saw a sports psychologist first, because I feel like that's what most athletes kind of go into. But I actually needed just a psychologist, just a therapist that I could talk about all my other issues in life rather than relating it to sport. And for me, I was at the Manchester bombing in 2017. And I think that was a massive turning point for me, because, you know, I realized that there's more to life than just swimming up and down. And I remember going to training that following day, and I just wasn't in the right headspace. And my coach was like, you've got world championships this summer. Like, you need to get in, you need to keep going. But I basically had to take 2 weeks out of the water just to focus on myself. And that was a catalyst for me to coming out as gay, to go into a therapist rather than a sports therapist, and talking about my life away from the water, which ultimately led for me to being authentic and me showing up to work, showing up to the pool every day, being my true authentic self.
Lovely question. Thank you. You know, you said, and I said, you're a smiley person. It's part of you, isn't it? You're kind of smiling, yeah. Part of you. In the stalking, there was one video where I saw you cry. And it was when you went back to Jamaica, the country that you'd represented, for the first time after you had come out as gay. And you were filming while you were there. You were kind of scared whilst you were there. It was, I hope it doesn't upset you, but it's hard to watch. So I can't imagine how hard it was for you to experience. And I just thought, in the work that you do now, where you are advocating for equality in places where there's still quite a lot of work to do, you are often, I would imagine, you're faced with challenge, you're faced with people who aren't ready for change. And I wondered how you stay confident when you know, I saw some of those messages that you got from people, and I hope that is not a regular thing, but they weren't nice messages. And I'm sure you get other messages that are challenging for what you are trying to, you know, advocate and make sure that people have that access. How do you stay confident when other people are challenging what it is you are working towards?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good one. I think, you know, so that video was tough because I think I got lots of death threats after I decided to represent Jamaica. And I think it was a very tough time because after 2017 and what I'd experienced that year, I really wanted to do something for the community. I wanted to help, basically. And I think I really struggled with the regret from the incident in Manchester because I just ran. I didn't help anyone else. And it took me a long time to really understand that regret and that guilt. So I think I decided to represent Jamaica because, you know, it is illegal to be gay in Jamaica. And I know that there's such an amazing community out there that struggle to be themselves every day. So for me, my ambition or the burning inside for me was actually helping people and just making the biggest impact. So I feel like it's tough when you are faced with negativity and, you know, sometimes it's hitting your head on a brick wall, but actually, if not me, who? If not now, when? And I think it's great now that I've almost changed the stereotypes of swimming, that black people can swim or people of color can swim, but also sexuality, you know, I'm just trying to be myself. I'm not trying to change anyone's minds and turn anyone gay. I think that's what I was always getting messages about, like, why are you trying to turn everyone gay? I was like, I'm really not. So yeah, I feel like now I get so much joy from helping others, and anyone that comes with me that may not be confident or may be struggling or can't understand it, I just try to help educate and enlighten them on my views and not necessarily change anyone's minds, but hopefully do that in the process.
I think I'm just trying to relate it back to the context of a lot of people who are listening to this, whose context of change and challenge probably isn't as significant as that, but it could be a difficult person at work whose mind that they're trying to, I guess, that they're trying to influence. Have you got any advice to that person? They've got something at work, they're trying to, you know, put something in place that they feel really passionate about in their company, and they're just getting challenge and challenge and challenge, and maybe they are kind of starting to doubt themselves, like, should I do this? Am I the person to do it? Maybe I'm not good enough to make this thing happen in my company. Have you got like a piece of advice for them that you think this is what might help you if you're in that situation?
Yeah, I think just little reminders. So for me, obviously waking up at 4:30 every morning to go training was tough. My mum and even my friends, when I lived up in Manchester for a time, would leave me like a little post-it note to say, go and smash it. So, and getting those messages at 4 a.m. in the morning when you had an 8K session to do and you was going to push your body harder than you've ever pushed it before, I think it just kind of picks you up. So I feel like, you know, with it, whether it's people in work or, you know, in whatever setting, sometimes just remind them like where it's coming from, why you're deciding to push this forward or bring this idea forward, because, you know, I feel like everyone does have a heart and it's almost finding out what their reason why is and why they're trying to push you away. Because, you know, it's tough. It's definitely tough out there, and we all have barriers and highs and lows. But yeah, sometimes we all just need a gentle reminder of why we're doing what we're doing and why we started.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing all of those experiences. I think you've had such an amazing experience, from the athletics to all the things that you've been doing. I think it's amazing. I really appreciate you kind of sharing that experience and some of those gremlins along the way with us as well.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks, everybody. I'm going to invite Dolly to the stage. Thank you, Dolly. Dolly, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it, particularly because you're not feeling very well. Sarah, take note. She'll be listening to this after. No, I'm joking. She's really poorly. That's really mean. Okay, it's fine.
I know, I do actually sound like a gremlin. I sound like I live under a bridge in a forest.
They brought you the gremlin in the beautiful form of Dolly. So again, along with my stalking, I was listening to a podcast that you were on last night. I was like, get to know Dolly rapidly. And I was really intrigued by something you said. It was on Sarah Grinberg's podcast. And you said something about success and confidence that I thought was interesting and would love to have a chat with you about. So the quote, because you might not remember saying it, you said, "I thought success would be the subtraction of problems rather than the multiplication of new ones." Yeah. And it was all around when your kind of book came out and exploded and kind of all this success happened. And I think that sometimes with confidence gremlins, we think, well, I'll just be more successful, and then that gremlin will go, because then I'll know I'm good enough, or then I'll think I know enough. And I thought, oh, there's a story behind that quote about the relationship between your success and maybe some of the things it led to, and maybe some of the relationships it had with confidence. So I wonder if you could give us a bit of an insight into success and confidence and what that has looked like for you.
Actually, in preparation for this, I was thinking about what my gremlins are and have been. And I think my gremlins only really appeared when things started going well in my career. Because my gremlins that I had when I was working towards something, when I didn't have a writing career, before I had an agent, before I had any sort of, before I was like paid to be a writer, my gremlins were just like the very fundamental fear of failure. Mm-hmm. But I think the fear of failure was so fantastical that it was counterweighted with the dream of success. Mm-hmm. So when I remember like spending a lot of time fantasizing about like what will happen if I never get to be a writer, what will happen if I never get to write a book, what will happen if I never, if this thing that I've wanted to do since I was a little girl, if I've made this up and I'm not good at it. And that's really heavy. But then on the flip side of that, like sitting on the bus on the way to my office job, I could, with the right hangover, move myself to tears with an Oscar acceptance speech that I'm going to give when I win Best Screenwriter. So it was like, that was kind of miraculous as well. So they're not really gremlins rooted in any sort of reality. They're just like a free-floating self-doubt fantasy, I suppose, both positive and negative. And then it was only after, and I really did think, like, when I have a book published and if people buy it, I will never have a problem again. In the same way that I think some people think that if they get married, they'll never have a problem again, which I hear is not the case. So
I'm just going to be quiet. My husband's not here tonight. So.
But it's true, isn't it? It's all really easy. You never have a row ever again. Life is simple.
What were your reflections? Sorry.
And I think, well, the one that really kicked in was the gremlin of perception. Because when you have an audience, there's a perception of who you are, whether that's positive or negative. If it's negative, then that can really live in your head, because every time you go to write something, you're thinking, right, how do I sway those people on Twitter who say those mean things about my books? And then if it's positive, that can also live in your head, because you're thinking, how do I not lose those people? Because I've got to keep those people on side. And actually, as Daisy and I have spoken about a lot, is that the thing that you need to write is you need to feel liberated. You need your integrity. You need to feel like being you is okay. That's the only way that you're confident and free enough to make any sort of decent art. And actually, I think the great irony of wanting to be like the artistic temperament and the creative mind is that the very thing that propels you to do it is the thing that makes you totally incapable of dealing with it when it goes well, which is being incredibly sensitive, overly self-aware, hyper-observant, probably quite self-conscious, obsessive and over-analytical. So it's like, what do you give that person? Don't give them success and people knowing who they are and giving opinions about their innermost thoughts and the art that they've created from the depths of their soul. They definitely shouldn't have that.
You're speaking from very deep experience here.
Yeah, I've always said, like, I remember I was watching the Robbie Williams documentary, and I do think of him as a great, great artist. I was watching it with, has anyone watched the Robbie Williams
Yes, I have watched it.
It's so good. It's so good. And I remember watching it with someone who works in finance, has like a very proper professional grown-up job. And there's this bit in the Robbie Williams documentary where he'd had a really, really bad review in the Enemy. And he goes out to perform to like tens of thousands of people screaming his name. And he has a panic attack on stage because he's just thinking about these people that have like sneered at his new album. And I was so, that spoke to me so deeply in terms of like, I so understand what it is to not be able to let go of those voices. And the person I was watching it with said, why can't the proof of his work be the cheering rather than the negative review? And I was like, because he's not a finance person. He's not like you. He's not, he's a creative person, which means that he's probably insecure. He wants everyone to like him and that he's deeply sensitive. So actually the people who should have success in a creative space should be like accountants. They should be logical people.
Have we got accountants here? Front row!
You should be on stage at Nebworth.
So I was intrigued. I read about your, when you were younger, that you used to write at the bottom of your work, The Swimmer. You know how you talked about that? And that actually you kind of bullied when you were at school. And I wondered whether, because you have so many people that love your work, Dolly, but there will be the odd one of person that doesn't and is just horrible.
It's more than just odd one, but okay. Thank you for saying that.
But do you have as an identity of, well, like Dolly the writer and Dolly the non-writer, so I don't have to look at that. Do you protect yourself from like the critique or criticism that might just come because your work is so out in the world, or do you just avoid it?
I'm getting much better at it. It's like the main kind of work of self-preservation that I do. I mean, I had a really, really bad year in 2020, professionally and personally. That was like the worst year of my life. And I remember during that time, it was the first time where I felt things going a little bit wrong with my career. And I remember having this real meltdown because I was like, oh no, I've made a big mistake. All I have done is work since I was 13. Like, all I've done is put on little plays at school, write for local papers when I was at sixth form. You know, I was like career obsessed my whole life. It's kind of like the predominant memory of the last 15 years has been sitting in front of a laptop. It's kind of all I talk about and think about. And in that year, where I remember thinking, oh no, that was a bad idea, because when it goes wrong, which inevitably it does for everyone, you have highs and lows, suddenly you're lost and you were like, what was all that for? And that was a really good lesson to me, in that your entire self-esteem just can't be rooted in the notion of success or beyond success, just your professional life. You just can't do that. So it was a really valuable lesson to learn.
We sometimes talk about the idea of enmeshment, which is where you become what you do. And when that happens, you're really overexposed to the ups and downs because you don't have the other things around your life that help you to be resilient. So it sounds like 2020 was not a great year.
Yeah, and famously not a great year globally.
yeah.
So also, it was not like all the other, like the recourse that I would do, like tequila shots with friends, couldn't do that. Yeah. Go to the movies, couldn't do that. Go on holiday, couldn't do that. So I'm going to hazard a guess it wasn't a great year for anyone.
Yeah. One thing we've not talked about that I'd love to sort of ask you about, and maybe see if you've got any thoughts as well, Daisy and Michael, is communities around you. So again, we talk about pride being a way that you create a cage around your gremlin and stop it getting in your way. And we also talk about people, like having people that you can talk to and be open and honest with. Has that been helpful for you? Have you naturally found like a little confidence gremlin support system that, like, whether it was 2020 or with whatever's going on in your world right now, that though you've got those people, and if you have, has that been helpful?
It's invaluable. It's completely saved me. Daisy and I have been friends doing the same job for 10 years. And I have a group, I probably have about five to seven, like close writer friends who I'm in touch with a lot. And community is just so important. It helps with normalizing the very specific professional situations you find yourself in. It helps, the sharing of gremlins is so important with other people who you see as successful, talented people, to know that they go through the exact same punitive internal processes in their heads. That's very reassuring. I think finding, like, it's hard because I think that there's a certain type of peer group friendship that can make you more anxious and can make you awaken the comparison gremlin. But when you find the right group of people and it feels like every win of theirs is a win for you, and that you're all doing something together, you're all a part of something together, it's just so important for giving you that confidence.
And is that for you, is that like on WhatsApp? Does that exist when you meet up? How does your confidence support system come into action?
I mean, a lot of it is sharing problems. So, like, for example, Daisy and I will send a WhatsApp being like, can I check this is normal? This is happening with an editor. This is happening with some notes I've got. This is happening with a deal or whatever. Like, that stuff, I think, is really, really important. But it's also about sharing work, reading each other's work, celebrating each other's work. I mean, increasingly, I realise that the only people I'm ever really, really writing for when I'm writing are my peers, like the people that I love who do the same job as me, who do it really well. When I get a text from them saying that they've read my book and they've enjoyed it, it means more to me than any review that I could get.
I got a lovely message from someone in my community last night that was like, I've read the Gremlins book and I love it and I want some more. And it was really, you know, actually sometimes getting that, like, that little bit of feedback is so, it's so meaningful when you've got kind of people kind of rooting for your work. And Daisy, what about you, support systems? I mean, obviously you and Dolly are kind of co-supporting.
It's Dolly. Dolly is my entire support system. I think it's true. And I do think, you know, going back to sort of talking about comparison, sharing those gremlins together absolutely demystifies it. And, you know, every time when, you know, you do have friends who are in that world and you know that you're all working very hard and there are highs and lows. I'm really lucky where I have got a little gang of people to talk to. One of my friends is a really fantastic thriller writer after quite a long wait, and she's written many successful books. We were all kind of waiting for her to sort of to get her new deal, and it happened. And, you know, I felt like elated. I almost felt like, you know, she was as proud as I would when, like, my sisters get promoted, or, you know, I was going to say it's like she was my child, but, you know, she's a mother and she probably wouldn't appreciate that comparison. But another thing is I moved from London to Margate about 7 years ago, and Margate is... it's a small town and I can be in the worst mood and I can be really sad and really in my own head. Then I will pop to the gym, go to the shops, and I will bump into a friend on the way back from Morrison's. And I won't, you know, necessarily say like, oh, it's all terrible, we're all doomed. But just sometimes I think, oh, I just needed a 5-minute chat with someone I really like who's normal, who's not... in this world. I think I forget, and it's different for every single person here. I often think about the pros and cons of the way I work, that when I first entered the workforce, all I ever wanted was to be left alone to write. I have hated being in offices and always feeling really sort of self-conscious and stressed and like I'm not delivering enough. And then I talk to other writer friends. We say, don't you really miss it when you could just turn up and be slightly hungover and all you did is reply to emails and that still counted? You were still getting paid. So, you know, the grass is always greener. But yeah, I think it's me realizing that my gremlins really grow when I'm alone with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, someone sort of pricking a balloon. It only takes like a little bit of insight or support. Sometimes a direct, please help me with this problem, but sometimes just someone else's company and it goes away. And I feel so lucky. I didn't do it on purpose. I just stumbled upon it. But having that mix of having a lot of support from lots of old friends on WhatsApp and, you know, we live in different places and everyone gets busy, but also living in a place where it feels like a real community, which I love. I'm really, really grateful for that.
Maybe kind of creating that community. Michael, I've sort of got this vision of your support system on WhatsApp just having like loads of medals and high five, you know, like medal emojis. Because isn't it like qualifying for the Olympics at the moment? Have I got that right?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Good sports. Sarah would be so proud.
I think for me, you know, I'm very lucky that I've actually got lots of friends who are Olympic champions. And I feel like actually going to them, they just give me a whole new kind of outlook on support and being there. But I think for me also, I've really found a connection with the LGBT community. Mm. You know, I love Pride and I used to always think, you know, why are people going to Pride and celebrating? And I think kind of a preconception of me is obviously I don't really wear much clothes when you're swimming. And, you know, I think obviously Pride, that comes out and everyone feels like they're swimmers in Speedos. And, and for me, I'm like, actually, for me, it's just about bringing people together and celebrating, you know, differences and just... yeah, just having these amazing conversations like this today. And I think feel like I get a lot from opening up and just being really honest and bringing people together. It's amazing.
think the, I guess the insight is about like finding a community that you feel safe to share in. And maybe you either create that community or you join one that already exists, but that stops the gremlins just growing in your head because you're kind of sharing them with other people. Last thing, best pieces of career advice. Daisy, best piece of career advice for listeners and learners.
Have something that's yours. Have something outside your 9-to-5 job or your career that just belongs absolutely to you, that you love. Even if it takes some time to find it, just something that you do it because you love it and no one can take away from you.
Amazing. Thank you.
The best way to have career confidence is to do the thing rather than talk about the thing. Be really, really productive. Do as much research as you can. Live it as much as you can. And that's the best way to feel creatively confident or professionally confident.
Do the thing. And Michael.
I think don't let anyone dampen your light. Keep shining. Just keep manifesting good things. And I think no matter what the future holds, just believe in it wholeheartedly because anything is possible.
Okay, thank you so, so much. Huge round of applause for guests. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing this moment. I really hope that you've taken some inspiration from everybody's words of wisdom and you can take your gremlins with you tonight and you can talk about them with other people and you can let them know that it's okay for them to talk about it too. But thank you very much for making the time to be here. I know your evenings are really precious and I really appreciate you supporting everything we do on Squiggly Careers. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.